When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Smart Food Popcorn. Some decisions aren't the best, like skipping ahead in your favorite podcast. Think of all the banter you'll miss, the lore in the making. Luckily, Smart Food Popcorn is a no-brainer. Deliciously tasty and available in a variety of fun flavors. It's a smart decision every time. Smart Food. Add smart. To learn more, visit smartfood.com.
Hi everyone, welcome to another edition of Soap from the Box, the podcast where I talk to actor mates who I directed in some of the country's biggest continuing dramas. This week it's my mate Neil McDermott, who played Ryan in EastEnders, and I actually spoke to him in the summer when it was boiling hot, which seems ages ago now, so I'm actually quite looking forward to getting a cup of tea and listening to this one back myself. Hope you enjoy it. So the next guest on my podcast is Neil McDermott, who played EastEnders' Ryan Malloy. And Neil, I have to say, the first time I worked with you is probably one of the most memorable times, because our first scene was you having to run across Albert Square
in the
naked in February, I think it was.
Was that the first one?
Yeah, wow. One of the first scenes, because that was the first block. Can you imagine? I mean, that's the weirdest. Kind of weird,
introduction
to an actor, yeah. And obviously, I remember.
Funny enough, I heard about you before I met you because
I
was good friends with Matt Wolfenden, who still am, but obviously don't see him so much anymore. He told me about you coming, this new young director who'd been working on Emmerdale, and who was really fantastic. So he's a big fan of yours.
And then I arrived.
You know, really looking forward to meeting you, mate. It was great. And yeah, so you managed to get the,
I always remember that one of the reasons they did that scene was June Brown to say, "Oh, I say," at the end of it, when you ran across the square.
But it was the stag do, wasn't it? So I was working
Ryan with stag do for the wedding, yeah.
That's right, working with Sid Owen quite a lot on that.
I think you might have gone to the pub with Sid Owen beforehand.
I think. I certainly went back to Sid's house, I think, for a little bit. And then, the characters went into the pub and were very drunk by the point that Ryan was running across the Albert Square in the Nerd, which is one thing you never think you're going to do, I suppose.
So let's get to the character. Basically today, I'm going to spend half the time kind of talking about the character in EastEnders and half the time about you. So you joined in 2009, EastEnders, I know, it's so long ago, and was involved in everything, basically. Kidnap, drug dealing, petty crime, bit of everything as he arrived. I mean, I suppose it was interesting as he arrived, because you didn't know what way he was going to go.
No, not really. I was really lucky. I spent 2.5 years on the show in that stint before going back and doing other things. And I suppose when you spend a relatively short amount of time, really, compared to some people, you become at the heart of the storylines quite a lot. And Ryan really was a story-driven character, I suppose, rather than a really characterful, funny role, you know? Obviously, soaps have their sort of stock characters, and he was definitely like the bad boy role that was coming in. Rob Kaczynski had left not long before, and obviously people like Nigel Harmon and all those people who played those bad boy roles, and this was the next one. So yeah, being teamed up with Charlie Brooks and doing...
Did you audition for it, obviously?
Yes.
Were there lots of... Because a few people, like Nina, went in and was approached about the role. Did you have to audition with other people? Do you remember people going for your role?
Yes, there was definitely other people up for the role. I had done EastEnders before.
I know, I read that as... Do you remember the character name?
Ben.
Yeah. Not Ben.
Ben the Road
Not the
Sweeper.
Ben, no. Yeah. Ben the Huge defining part.
So when I was quite young, when I was not long out of drama school... You know, my photo arrived in front of Julia Crampsey, and she was casting, I think, for Nigel Harmon's role at the time, and got me in at the same time as all these guys that were auditioning for that. So I was, when I auditioned at that time, was thinking, well, I'm far too young for this role because all these guys are up for this road sweeper. But obviously, she'd brought me in at the same time as then and got me in to play that. So they'd sort of been introduced to me, I guess, a little bit. And then I was up in Leeds doing the Royal with our friend Glynis Barber. So I was doing 6 months on that, which finished in the December, and the audition came in January. Now, in between December and January, I went to India for 2 weeks, and the audition came through while I was out there. So it was like the day after I got back.
Oh, my God.
So I got back, tanned like anything, looking rough as anything, and came in and auditioned and did my thing. And by all accounts, they loved that. So called me back for a recall. I sort of smartened myself up slightly and tried to think about the character a little bit more, if you like.
And they didn't like that.
And they didn't like that so much. It's the only ever showed Deirdrick Santa, I believe, so Julia tells me, my first audition.
Oh, wow.
Never showed the second one.
See, so things are meant to happen, I think, aren't they?
They really are.
Everything is meant to happen. Everything happens for a reason.
Absolutely.
So just to, before we start getting into the proper meat of everything, I'm just going to give a little kind of fun quiz, see if you can remember things about rugby, which I think you should. I was trying to be easy on you, actually.
Thank you.
So one of your first big storylines was helping Whitney, who was obviously your sister, and some friends escape from a fire at the cafe. Can you remember who started the fire?
Oh, yes, I do remember,
It was the legend
Nick Cotton. And I think it was me and Charlie Clements played Bradley, had to sort of rescue people from the cafe,
And what was it like? Like, John Altman, obviously, is was one of the, people that I remember from when I was young watching it. Do you remember going in thinking, oh my God, there's Pat Butcher and there's, EastEnders is one of those shows that even if you haven't watched it, you know about it.
Absolutely. You're kind of nervous going into a job like that because everyone's so well known. But the moment when you're sort of on the square, and I think it was June Brown walking towards me as Dot. I never really saw June Brown not as Dot for about 3 months or so, I think. So, seeing her walking towards me suddenly made it all feel a lot more real than it did before, I think.
And it's obviously filmed in Boreham Wood. I think probably Top of the Pops stopped, hadn't it, when you joined?
I don't remember Top of the Pops.
Because I was going to say, it was always quite weird, wasn't it, at lunch? Not that the lunch is great at Boreham Wood, I have to say. But you'd have Holby City there as well, so you'd kind of be sat with people dripping in fake blood, and Dot Cotton sat there as well.
Absolutely.
Did it make you nervous though? Does that change the way you approach a job? Do you know what I mean? When you're going in with a really well established cast and you've got kind of got to find your place there. Do you know what I mean? As opposed to going to a new production when you're all.
Yeah, I saw. I mean, what they do at EastEnders, or certainly did when I was there, is they give you what's called a mentor. So Jake Wood was my mentor.
Oh, that's a good pick.
Great actor. So I suppose, ask him any questions at the beginning there. I wouldn't say he was over the top in his mentoring by any stretch of the imagination.
What can they do, really?
But I just asked him one question, really, which was, what sort of level are you meant to pitch at here? I was trying to always think about not coming in as over the top. Sometimes when I watch soaps and new characters come in, I often feel that they're too big.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to do that. But Jake just sort of said, well, just do your thing. Just do your acting. That's it. Don't worry about it. Okay.
Great. Thanks, Jake.
But in a way, that's kind of right. You've got to go in and just do your thing. You know, you can't try and do what somebody else has done before or try too hard. Otherwise, you know, you start getting a bit messy and you start messing yourself up. So you've got to go in. And I think I sort of pitched it, if anything, a little under when I first went in. Whilst I was trying to find what this groove is of EastEnders, which will be different from Coronation Street, Emmerdale and all the other soaps, and obviously different from other TV programmes. But I sort of feel like every show has its own groove, its own style that you get used to the more you do it.
And I think it's harder on EastEnders actually for you guys, because I think the other soaps that I've directed, everyone's a lot more together, whereas EastEnders is quite segregated cast-wise, isn't it? Like, you have your little family or whatever, and then you don't really have...
So I think it was at the time when I was there, because there was cuts back on the BBC at the time, I think. So those big scenes in the Vic and...
There's not that many of them.
Yeah, they sort of cut them back and made it much more 3 or 4 handers, or there might only be about 8-10 people in an episode instead of, like, 30.
And then, obviously, who... Well, no, obviously, you might not know this. You should know this. Who did Ryan first move in with?
Oh, God. Well, would it be Janine?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And who obviously you became an amazing partnership. And again, talking about the, I mean, you were really lucky, I suppose. You worked with probably some of the best girl actors there, didn't you? Charlie, who is incredible. Lacey Turner, who is incredible.
Yeah.
And Shobner, who's incredible.
Yeah. Like, Charlie, I really rate as a fantastic actress, really. she should do as much as anyone when she leaves the soap and everything else. She's a brilliant, brilliant actress to work with.
She plays things really cleverly, I think. Like, really, I watched some old clips of you today, and yeah, she does. Yeah, you just watch her
reactions. Well, of course, she obviously plays the villain of the show, really, but she manages to sort of get the audience on her side, even when she's doing the most.
But you did that as well, because you obviously went in as a bad boy, and I think to play the bad guys or the girls, you basically need to find a heart for that person, don't you?
Absolutely. Yeah, because if you're just bad, but then you become a bit stereotypical. And I always said when I was going in, okay, he's the bad boy. I remember speaking to Deirdre about it and Dominic, who was story editor at the time, and sort of saying, well, the bad boys I know in life, if I'm honest, they're not always bad and horrible. Like, most of the time they're quite decent or funny or charming or whatever else. And then every now and again, they do something a bit ridiculous that you go, right, probably can't be your friend properly for too long. Do you know what I mean? So that's kind of what I always wanted to do with him, capable of doing bad things, but actually in general can be quite decent as well, you know.
So on Christmas Day, what year Ryan split up with Janine?
Well, it'll be near the end of March, so would it 2011?
I've got 2009, but is that right?
He split up with Janine, or maybe it was the first time.
Maybe that's the first together. Time. I mean, you were there. So you were there for 3 years.
About two and a half years.
Yeah. I found when I was working in soap, like 10 years just went by.
Yeah,
it goes so quickly, doesn't it?
Well, now when I look back, it feels like a very quick time in my career, because obviously you do many other things as well. So, but a very enjoyable time and a great job to work on. You know?
And did life? I mean, I think life must change instantly for you guys if you go on a show like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you remember the difference? Do you remember like the first time you went on screen and the difference?
Yeah, you just get recognised. You know, that's basically it, because soap actors are on the front of magazines and stuff in shops more so than maybe like a C-list Hollywood actor.
Yeah,
you don't get
to
see their faces as much as you see, and you're on screens 4 times a week or 5 times a week at the time, because we did the Sunday Omnibus as well. So people are really used to seeing your face, but you haven't really made enough money or anything to sort of deal with that just yet.
You haven't
so
got the gated mansion.
You still get on the trains and the buses and all that.
To
boring
words.
Yeah. So, yeah, quite often people do that thing, do they, where they...
Would you get the train every day?
I drove, but, if I was going out for a drink or whatever else, I'd have to get public transport to wherever I was going, or taxis. But at the time, at the beginning there, it was public transport for sure. And people do that thing where they pretend that maybe, I don't know, you can't hear them or something, and then they talk about you as your character to each other. Oh, he's the one who's been doing this. Oh, see that guy over there? And
I can hear you. Yeah. What was the kind of reaction to you normally? Because different people have different reactions, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
I've been with some actor friends who have, like, people just come over, and some who people are quite horrible too.
Yeah, well, obviously Charlie playing that sort of character, people are very standoffish with her. But everyone, you know, kind. I never had any trouble or anything like that. And people were just fans of the show. So in general, they were pleased to meet you. But you did notice, if I went out with Charlie Clements, for example, who played Bradley, people would want to come up and give him a cuddle and sort of make
sure
he's
all right.
Yeah, probably. But with me, they were a little bit more unsure just because of the character, I guess.
So who did Ryan hand back? Do you remember who you handed back Lily to after taking her on your return in 2016? Who did he hand him back to?
Surely Stacey, please.
No, Martin Fowler, James.
Oh, yes. So, when I went back,
And so the question really off of that was it weird going back when you'd left as a massive part of the show and then going back and kind of there's all these new faces there? Because I think Danny Dyer and that family had joined, hadn't they, on one of your returns?
Yeah. I mean, it's like, obviously, with that
show... Do you feel then like, they've not, like, you know, like you've been... Someone's stolen your place.
No, yeah, I didn't feel like that. I was, at the time, was pleased to go back in. I was keen to go and clear up the storyline because the character had gone on the run for manslaughter, essentially. So Dominic he had a fight with... Jodie. Yeah,
Who played...
Maybe the character was called Rob.
Rob, yeah.
They ended up in the sea in Southend, which is another story. Jodie's character never came out and mine did, so he went on the run. So Dominic, who was then the producer, got in touch to say that he'd like to clear up storylines so that perhaps the character could come back in the future. And I was keen to do that to kind of because you can't have a character on the square who's on the run from manslaughter.
Yeah, yeah. Back and from just, Scotland and be fine again.
All be forgiven. You know, it's a square of dreams, but you can't have a murderer.
You need at least 6 months
around.
In prison.
Exactly, yeah. So that's what we did. We went back, did a storyline. He went to prison, came out of prison. And I now believe, I think he got married to a prison guard that he
met. Yeah, Helen. I read that.
And Helen.
And
yes.
He's gone to Wakefield.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Does he have a child? I'm not sure, but yeah.
Sounds more depressing than Albert Square. Married to a prison warden in Wakefield. Yeah. So yeah, when you came in, you were obviously a mystery to everyone. And then it was revealed you were half brother of Whitney, yeah. Or Ryan was. And again, was it nice then? Did you know that when you went on board that that was going to happen? You knew that you were going to have this family connected and stuff?
I did, only by the audition. I think in the audition they changed the names.
Oh, okay.
I was acting with a character called Brittany, I think. I think that's something to do with Whitney Houston.
They did that quite a lot on EastEnders, actually. The other soaps didn't do that. You used to be auditioning for a part who you... And it would be so obvious who it actually was going to be, that part. But they call it... Teresa or something.
But obviously I knew that it was the sister. Yeah. She was this, or half-sister. I knew that from the word go, yeah. So I knew there was that going to be that. And actually we had a mum as well. We had Deborah was the name of Whitney and Ryan's mum, played by Ruth Gemmell. Brilliant actress. Who came in, did about 6 episodes at the beginning. And both characters had a problem with the mum and managed to bond through that hatred of her, I think, really.
So then we go to, I mean, one of my big memories of EastEnders is the live episode, which I didn't direct, thank God. But you were obviously, so to remind everyone, the live episode was all centred around who killed Archie.
That's right.
And basically, I remember there were loads of stuff going on at times. I remember Lacey Turner had lost her voice.
That's right.
So there was that, there was a runner who was pretending to be her for the final run through.
I think you can see that.
And went to kiss Charlie Clemens. But what basically was happening was, three people probably knew who had done it, and you all got told you were one of the suspects, weren't you? And you recorded, or you rehearsed an end where it was you.
We got, when the scripts came out, I think there were 10 endings, so 10 different people who could have done it. But then
and some were ridiculous, weren't they?
Yeah.
Jack or something, obviously hadn't done it, but you were one of the contenders.
And then, it became a stronger contender because in the dress rehearsals, they only did 3 endings. So we did it three dress rehearsals.
So that was you, Lacey, and Charlie, was
and,
it?
No, it was Max.
Jake, yeah.
So it's going to be one of us three. And obviously we'd filmed about 6 weeks afterwards.
That's what I found really clever, that they managed to do that. Because we'd all be looking at scripts going, can we not tell who it is?
Yeah.
Which is mad that they were able to do that, actually.
Yeah, and they were very clever because I remember working with Charlie afterwards and Charlie kept going, I think you did it, some of the stuff you're saying here. And I was like, oh God, I don't know, I don't quite know how to play this. Also, I remember that in the dress rehearsal, a director said to me that, could you play that line like you killed Archie?
Oh, really?
I was like, Right, okay. But actually what happened was, just before we went live, I don't know how long in advance Lacey knew.
I think she got told just during that show. Yeah.
About half an hour before
she went dreading, I just remember she was dreading it. She was like, shit, I can't speak.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be able to get it out.
And we were going to be told, us three, whose ending was going to be used, if you like. So who killed Archie? And Deirdre brought me into a little room and there was a camera behind him looking at me to capture my reaction. So I was like, oh, it's like, and obviously, like I said before, if you've killed someone, basically like getting the sack. You can't stay on the square to a certain extent. You've got to.
That's why I thought it was never going to be Lacey, because I thought they'd have to get rid of that person.
Yeah. But I suppose there was so much sort of reason for her committing that crime.
So what was your face then when you got told? Were you relieved or were you?
I was relieved, yeah. Because slightly thinking, if it is me, then obviously that's me going out the door pretty shortly afterwards. So I didn't want it to be me at that point. But, looking back, it's obviously a brilliant storyline, so.
And that was it, I think that was the first live episode, wasn't
it? That before one was, yeah.
EastEnders and before Coronation Street and Emmerdale did it.
Yeah, so
you weren't a massive, massive part of it, were you? But were you...
No.
Was it still... what was that like going on? I mean, because I remember a lot of cast at the time, quite a few cast didn't take part because...
Yeah.
Everyone was given the choice if they wanted to do it, and a lot of people didn't think that kind of show should be live.
Well, it had never been done before, so it was an amazing achievement by everyone there. Just for people who don't know, obviously the interior of the Queen Vic isn't next to the exterior of the Queen Vic, so you're doing a scene inside walk out the door, you're legging it basically over the other side of a studio.
Well, literally none of the houses in EastEnders, unlike the other side, so they're literally like a metre thick, aren't
That's
they?
Right.
They've only got a front door.
So people are running through studios to get to their next scene in a period of time, whatever they have. But, you know, we rehearsed it, like I say, like it was a theatre performance, if you like you would a theatre show. So I'd been experienced with doing shows and stuff before and working live.
So you were fine,
So I was sort of all right.
Obviously, I think it was the actors who had been in there so long that obviously you do forget theatre. You do forget what it's like. I mean, I remember poor Jo Joyner would never let me down because she calls. Yeah, oh, guys, awful, isn't it?
Very funny, though.
It's still really funny.
And Scott hadn't known anything. Scott, just to bring up Scott, sorry, mate.
That was right. That was the first line, I think.
Yeah.
Of the whole thing. Oh, my God. But it was amazing, wasn't it? It was an amazing atmosphere.
I think when you started thinking about, like, it was fine until you start thinking, hang on a minute, there's 11 million people watching this. So, yeah, it's a live show. Yeah, it's a
And as an actor, that's what I mean, it could stay with you, obviously, couldn't it? If you really did mess up.
Yeah.
Just really go, right, I don't think I want him in theatre anymore.
No, or anywhere.
Yeah. So, poor Jo Joyner. But the atmosphere, I came in for that night, and it was just electric, wasn't it? It was amazing.
Brilliant, brilliant night. It was an incredible achievement.
And the other thing that I remember, our other massive storyline, apart from you running through naked the square, but that was part of the bigger story, which was Barbara's leaving, which... Yeah. I was lucky enough to, which I think back, and that was a huge block because it was the fire, it was your wedding,
yeah,
it was the aftermath and her actually leaving, and obviously that involved a massive stunt, which you did quite a few stunts in EastEnders, but the one with you was you climbing up, and basically again, if people don't know, obviously because we did a big fire, and do you remember we actually rebuilt the whole Vic in the fire studio at, up the road where Star Wars was filmed and stuff, the George Lucas studio.
That's right, yeah. And it was a night shoot, wasn't it, as well?
And so then we did the outside night shoots, and you and Lacey, we got the stunt people.
Yeah.
And that's my first time I've probably worked with stunt people. And I found it quite weird, because I found the hardest thing about doing a stunt I found was they try to act and they can't act.
Yeah, that's right.
Don't act. And they were trying to act just coming off a ladder and it looked rubbish.
I remember, because I think I did like the last little bit, didn't I?
Yeah.
The last
four and steps, Barbara, the Barbara one looked so much like Barbara. Do you remember they were clearing up boxes and everyone kept thinking it was actually Barbara Windsor doing a stunt then clear up. But you had a wasn't there a nightmare stunt when you did your leaving in?
That's right, because
the stunt guy actually really injured himself.
He did, yeah. So in Southend, me and Jodie had a fight on the pier. That was obviously part of the storyline. We didn't just have a fight. And part of the storyline was that they both went over the edge of the pier together into the water. It was quite a big drop, you know. So they got these experts in, these stunt guys who are experienced in doing that. And they had to do it three or four times, maybe, to get the shot. And one of the times, one of the lads hit his head on the way down on like the metal stanchion that is kind of holding the pier up, if you like, and was knocked out like in the water, and his life was saved by the other stuntman. You know, he managed to get him out of the water and they managed to get the hospital. He was fine in the end, you know, thank God. But that was pretty frightening on that one.
God, yeah. And you were there for that, obviously.
Yeah, I was watching to sort of make sure he was acting well.
So weird, is it? And I remember Brian Kirkwood, who was boss at the time when we did your stunt, and I wanted to go again. And he was like, it costs something like 800 quid every time we go again or something.
Yeah,
because of what they get paid. And I was like, oh, shit.
Yes.
I know. Not that I would ever do that job. Can you imagine?
Well, right now, I'd do anything. 800 quid sounds all right.
So, we'll move to kind of you in a second, but we're leaving EastEnders. You know, that was your decision, obviously, to leave. I know we've talked about that, but was it partly because you were dying to get out to try to, because obviously theatre was your background?
Yeah, I think so. But, you know, I was with an agent who said, Neil, you should do about 2 years. So I got to the end of 2 years and basically hadn't really had the conversation with EastEnders about staying on, so did have the conversation quite near the end of that contract, and I was just asking really what was going to happen next for the character, and I'd been at the heart of storylines for 2 years doing the lives of the Christmases, lots of big stuff.
You were actually really lucky, you were literally constantly
and obviously when you're working with Lacey and Charlie, with those characters, you're at the heart of everything all the time. So I think it was Brian said to me that, you know, he will be quiet for a little while and then we'll build stories back up. And I made a decision there to say, well, I don't really want to be quiet. I'd prefer leave than be quiet.
Yeah.
And if I leave, I'll have another story, and then I hopefully will leave on a high. You know, going on advice from my agent and everything as well, to be able to leave the soap and still have a career where you're not thought of as just being that guy from that soap, you know? Which is always the tricky thing that
I think it's so hard, that
has to sort of negotiate. You know, Charlie talked to me about it a lot, obviously working with her. She'd done maybe 3 years, 4 years, and then left, and then gone back and done 3 years, and was sort of telling me how tricky it was to leave and be seen as not Janine from EastEnders or Ryan from EastEnders or whatever. Yeah.
So let's talk about you then. That's enough about Ryan. So you were, it was actually hard to find a lot about you because you're quite private anyway, aren't you? You don't really do like the bells and whistles. And
yeah, not really.
It's celebrity life.
No, I mean, obviously working in a lot in theatre, really. Had more of a TV career before EastEnders than after, if I'm honest. The jobs that became available to me afterwards were mainly theatre and mainly musical theatre.
But let's go way back. So you were born in 1980 in Southport and... You love football and you played, I think you were 10 for Liverpool. For Everton. So your brother Liverpool.
No, to be fair, my brother played for Liverpool and I was too young to join up, but I suppose would have joined Everton.
Oh, right.
But
how old was your brother when he played?
So he would have been, when did I was 8 when I moved.
So this is for like the 10. Junior team.
Yeah, like the schoolboys.
That's amazing.
Because obviously we were born in Southport, so that's up near Liverpool. And really in that area, it's football crazy, or certainly was when I was there.
Yeah.
And you were either red or blue.
Did that cause loads of divide in the house then?
Well, he was a Liverpool fan. Right. We were naturally competitive. So
what was your dad?
My dad was a Londoner, right?
Right, so okay.
He's a Chelsea fan.
Oh my God.
I know. And my little brother's Aston Villa, and we don't know why. We say he decided on the way down.
Okay.
but when we did move down to London, I ended up playing for Chelsea schoolboys until I was 16. I guess, before obviously giving up football to take
an actor.
Much more secure.
Acting.
Yeah, I'm a mad one.
Well, although you say that, kind of like the same way that if you really make it in football, you can earn millions. If you really, or not really make it in acting, that's what I find really weird about acting, that the level of making it is based on fame, which is a totally different thing, I think, isn't it? It's so weird.
But I think, you know... There are parallels between being a sporting person and being able to be an actor as well. There's the physical attributes that I suppose I was good at with sport definitely have helped me in my theatre career. Many of the roles I've played have been because they needed somebody who was able to be physical in whatever they're doing.
Yeah.
So a lot of times I'm cast based on being able to be physically capable to do it.
Yeah. What did your family think when you...
Yeah, I mean, it was alien to my whole family. Yeah. I mean, I come from a big family, lots of cousins and stuff, and nobody was in this business at all.
Not behind the scenes either.
No, nothing to do with it. So I just had this teacher at school, a guy called Frank Waitley, you can say he's the brother of Kevin Waitley, the actor, and he was my teacher at school. And he liked to get the sort of rugby boys or whatever into the drama.
Right, okay.
Because he just sometimes needed some bigger lads or athletic guys to do things. So he was always trying to get them in. And I think also helping those guys who were into their sport but maybe socially weren't great. And I would probably put myself in that category to a certain extent. It was really easy to express myself on a sporting field. But... in life or in the classroom or whatever else would find it more difficult.
Yeah.
So drama became very useful for me as a life skill in order to be able to
That's true probably talk. With professional footballers as well, isn't it? If you think about it really.
I spend so much time physical, but not much time using like speaking or anything else. Everything they do is they express themselves physically on a pitch or whatever. So it was really helpful for me. He got me, I mean, we were at a school where we weren't doing Tim Pan Alley and Bugsy Malone and all the rest of it. We were doing Romeo and Juliet and Our Country's Good. And he was, you know, he was great like that. And he also worked for a company called the National Youth Music Theatre.
Oh, wow. Okay, brilliant.
So he also drafted me into there and got me auditions for that. And I ended up doing the National Youth Music Theatre for 2.5, 3 years, maybe 4 years in the end, which is a national youth group who do musicals, and did you do that
after school?
No, whilst we did the Edinburgh Festival, we'd do a show up there.
Oh, brilliant.
Like, they're famously, like, Bugsy Malone was one that did really well for them, and went into the West End for like 6 months. But one of the main shows I was in that did really well was a show called The Kissing Dance. It was written by Howard Goodall and Charles Hart. So Charles Hart writes the lyrics on Phantom of the Opera. Howard Goodall wrote Bend It Like Beckham, and, you know, things like that. So they're really top people that they get to work with. And in that cast, I had people like Sheridan Smith, Michael Gibson, Declan Bennett, who was in EastEnders. I mean, just an array of Jay Jacobs, who was in Holby. So that cast of about 14, 15 kids.
There were loads of
probably about 10 or 11 went on to have really decent, successful careers in acting, which is incredible.
And so did musicals. So obviously, I mean, we'll talk about the other stuff you've done apart from musicals, but obviously you've done your massive musical theatre has been a massive part of your life.
Yeah.
What was the first, do you remember your first main role in a...
Weird, really. Like, I went to drama school and studied acting for 3 years on the advice of Frank and saying, I think you should do acting as opposed to musicals sort of thing.
Yeah.
I think that's where your strength lies. And I was like, kind of in agreement. And then you get into your third year and you do shows for agents to come and watch. And I was doing a musical called The Hired Man. And the choreographer of this in the school was a future Olivier Award winning Bill Deamer was choreographing it. And Bill was with the agent, Gene Diamond, who he said, get this kid in. And he gave me a job straight away.
Amazing.
So I signed with Gene Diamond, who was a wonderful agent. Oh, just an amazing woman. Bill was doing a show called Babes in Arms in Cardiff for like a few weeks and asked me to come in and do a role on it. First job out of drama school, great, go and do it. From there, I think then I did 6 episodes of EastEnders straight after that.
That's Ben the Road Sweeper.
Ben the Road Sweeper. And then played the lead in a new show called The Water Babies in Chichester. And at the time, I wasn't really aware, and maybe I should have been, that Chichester
was one of the best theatres ever. Yeah,
place to work. Theater,
yeah.
Brilliant place to work.
Yeah.
And I was playing the lead in
oh
a
my
new
God,
musical.
Amazing.
But it was directed by Jeremy Sams. Jeremy Sams, brilliant director. He took me straight from that into Sound and Music in the West End to play Rolf. So it would be the Connie Fisher version.
Yeah,
which
is amazing. I mean, that's...
Again, at the time, things are sort of happening to you.
Yeah,
you're not realising how amazing it is to be working as a named character, not the lead, but a named character in the London
Ladies
version.
And Connie Fisher, is she the one that had won the... That was one of those first programmes.
Graham Norton and
Andrew Lloyd
Webber,
yeah.
So, yeah, she came straight off the TV show into that. And
so how is it playing, like we were saying about like EastEnders Live episode when you knew 11, what's it like being in such an institution that is like the Palladium performing?
Yeah. I mean, luckily enough, I have been back since, which is amazing. I was, you know, working at, I mean, the Palladium's probably, along with Theatre Royal Drury Lane, the biggest and best theatres in London. It's an amazing place to work.
Because I always think you walk in at night going, oh, get the Palladium.
I did the second time, but the first time round, I was there for a year,
and
it was sort of just happening to me, if you like, and I didn't really realise, but there were 3,000 people watching you every night. Became kind of normal.
I know, but that's the thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, just without jobs, it becomes normal.
Yeah.
And what's the lifestyle like? Because I've never really asked my actor friends this, because obviously you work every night.
Yeah.
Is it you obviously live a totally different life, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, when you're younger,
you go out afterwards. I know there's one bar, isn't there, in London that everyone goes to?
Oh, there was a pub, yeah.
What's it called?
Soho.
It's
closed down.
Oh, right? Has it?
You know, during this
I remember going there once,
time.
And that was, oh, no, what a shame, because that's apparently where everyone went for all the different shows.
Just off Carnaby Street, there was one.
You all mates with people from the other show? Like, is it kind of
there is a place where you can all the different casts can kind of go late night. I didn't go there that much, to be honest.
Okay.
You sort of end up knowing everybody in the musical theatre. It kind of becomes a little bit of a closed shop or a box where you're auditioning with the same guys for the same roles. So, but like you say, we'd go out for a few drinks after work sometimes because I was a young guy.
But is it a hard life? Because also, obviously, everyone else is working 9-to-5 jobs.
Yeah, so it's unsociable hours, obviously.
So
now, as you get older, it becomes a little bit trickier in terms of your families and everything else. So obviously, drop the kids at school maybe at 9 o'clock and then don't see them again till the next morning
because
you can't
hard,
really do
yeah.
the pickup. Or, you know, that's working in London. But obviously, when you have to go
on
away
tour.
And do tours and stuff, then you're away all week and maybe come back on a Saturday night or a Sunday morning and then go back again on a Monday.
And again, a lot of people listening to this will probably think it's a really glamorous job, which again, 5% of it is.
Yeah.
The rest of it, especially when you're on tour, don't you? Because you have to find your own digs and everything, don't you?
Yep, you do, yep.
Yeah. So even when Glynis Barber went, and she was, yeah. she couldn't believe she was having to find her own, like, what?
I can imagine
Glynis's face, and she's expecting conversation. But it is quite, I mean, I'm quite dumbfounded that everyone's yeah. playing. I mean, it's tough, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And how much do you want to really spend on digs when you're going to be there for a week and... or the rest of it when you're trying to earn money to bring
home.
Do
you stay with five lads who are yeah. at uni?
Yeah.
Well, exactly. Like 20 quid a week.
I can't do that anymore. I think sometimes I've been away, I'd stayed with people, but now when I go away, I think the last one I did was a show called Club Tropicana with Joe McElderry in it, and I stayed on my own everywhere I went, just because I needed my own space from lots of young... I was the oldest
Oh, yeah. See, that's when it starts getting bad, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
And they're all doing what you did years ago.
Yeah. 100%. Just got
so you've done, you did Shrek as well. Was yeah. Rita in Shrek? Or did she do Shrek off Rita Simmons, who played Simmons, yeah. who played Roxy?
So I didn't do it with Rita. Did right. she do it on tour, or did she do it another
she
time? I'm not sure.
She left way after you, didn't she? So she was
Kimberly Walsh played Fiona.
Oh, okay.
And then Carly Stenson played Fiona as well, so...
And that's what I mean, that's a small world. So Kimberly's sisters with Amy Walsh, or yep. from Emmerdale. Yep. Carly obviously goes out with Danny Mack, yep. you're now working with him, Pretty
exactly,
Woman.
Exactly, yeah.
And like you said, it becomes a really small world. And TV's the same, isn't it? You end up... I mean, I always remember Glynis saying that she's always up for auditions with the same person. They become like your nemesis. Yeah. I mean, have you got someone like... have you got anyone like that, that or you remember from...
I think
and Danny, Matt must be quite...
Danny's a little younger than me. But yeah, I guess we must be in a similar sort of bracket. Yeah. I mean, he's very good looking, Danny.
I mean, as you are, mate.
And I've kind of just edging past that into more characterful work. But and also,
he's too good looking. Danny Matt. He's annoyingly good looking.
I act with it, so I'm going to do Pretty Woman the musical at the moment, and I act with Danny, and I basically spend all my scenes just staring at his face, talking to him.
I did Hollyoaks with him.
It's very unnerving.
At least he's short.
At least he's a little bit. Don't say that.
But he's the nicest guy, Danny.
Oh,
yeah.
He really is. And Carly as well. The pair of them.
Which is even more annoying, actually, because when you work with people that are also really nice, you're like, oh, come on.
But I've kind of fallen into a world now of, like, obviously doing Shrek and Wind in the Willows and a few other things are basically... being cast as baddies as opposed to
right.
goodies. So Danny, I think, probably is still being playing goodies.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas I've kind of, because I'm a little bit older, I guess, I've kind of moved into baddie area now.
And did you, Danny, like, because Hollyoaks, I think, is even madder than all the soaps, isn't it? You've never done Hollyoaks?
No. I've not done any of the other soaps, but you could say
there
was
stories. I was just going to say, when you're in something with soap with another soap star, is it kind of like... Because again, people come
for
the face
and the name, don't they?
Yeah, you have a little
bit in common, don't you? Yeah. Certainly when we were in rehearsals and stuff, we had little chats about life on soap and life after soap.
Yeah, that's the hardest thing, isn't it, basically, life after soap?
Yeah, well, the decisions you make. Danny obviously went and did Strictly Come Dancing and
did
really well on it. It was fantastic.
Would you ever do shows like that?
Well, now you
I suppose
me,
now,
I'd
yeah,
probably
you
say
would,
yes.
But
at the time when I was leaving, I was definitely of the mindset that I didn't want to go down that route.
Yeah.
And I think wrongly, actually. And I think maybe you should embrace
that. I think so many people
that.
Say that as well.
Yeah, but at the time, I guess Strictly was a little bit newer.
And I think at the time, you're so big in that show that actually probably part of what you're looking for is to...
Yeah.
Is to get out of that.
I definitely wanted to go and do something else big to...
Yeah.
So, not put it behind you, but just to say I am something else as well. But I found, I think it would be... irresponsible not to say that there is snobbery to a certain extent towards soaps.
Totally.
Whether it's soap actors or soaps in general, so that when you leave, your options, obviously your commercial options become wider. So
yeah.
you like pantomime, musical theatre, Strictly, the shows on TV, the reality shows, all that becomes much wider. But other avenues in this business become slimmer.
Yeah.
Especially in British TV and British straight theatre.
Yeah.
When I say straight theatre, obviously like plays and things like that. It does become trickier. You can't say that it doesn't.
And it still is. And I think it's really, same for directors, like it's really hard to get work at. Because those people haven't actually watched soaps. They don't realise how good they are. Because I think, especially actors, thing you guys do so well, because again, just reminding people that you never film anything in sequence. You can be over like 12 episodes at a time. So yeah. I think practice to map your journey like that is incredible. It's strange,
especially when you think about across the pond in America, that, you know, people who work on soaps or whatever else over there, or in Australia, can find their way to be Hollywood superstars much easier. And actually, I found that when I left, the main things that I was auditioning for was American TV shows. That was the main thing that I was auditioning for.
And that's changed so much anyway now as well. The big, huge actors are now doing American TV series.
It was sort of happening around the time I was there.
Here as well, yeah.
I was auditioning, and I was doing okay, and the auditions were getting quite far sometimes, but auditioning against people who already established Hollywood superstars.
Then?
No, I didn't, because I didn't want to do that.
Right.
To be honest, I wanted to do British drama, TV, and work here and be successful here. That's all I wanted, really. If my career took me to America, okay. But I didn't want to go over there and spend six months and work in a restaurant. And,
every other British actor.
Well, that you have to do if you want to spend time out there trying to get a big break. Unless you're taken over there, you know.
And then, so now obviously you're married to Michelle, you've got two kids. I mean, how does having a family change? Like, we've kind of talked about it a bit, but, you know, it's a hard career, isn't it, acting still? It's
you like I say about going to America and everything else, you know, one of the main reasons for not wanting to go out there and spend all your money on gambling on that career is because you have a family. So you say, well, I need to work here, and we want to stay here. The kids are going into school and everything else. And your choices become a little bit more based on that, without any shadow of a doubt. So a 13-month contract on Shrek the Musical at Theatre Royal Drury Lane playing a lead role is very attractive.
Yeah, amazing, yeah.
And it's a fantastic show and a fantastic theatre and people to be working on. But
I think acting is just one of those jobs that you're always going to have to make decisions, and some of them are never going to be...
Yeah.
They're right decisions, but they're always going to be gutting, basically, aren't they? There's always going to be gutting decisions involved in being an actor.
Yeah. I think the American industry and all that, it is tailored to somebody who's able to sit and wait. Basically, that means, you know, you can afford to sit and wait.
Yeah.
So if you can do that, then you can perhaps have more chance of reaching those roles, I think.
And then, so recently, you were, just before all what's happened, you were in Pretty Woman. We kind of touched on it with Danny Mac. Just tell me about that production. I mean, huge. That's the first time that's been done.
So it was done on Broadway, a musical version of Pretty Woman. But they had the whole directing team come over. So Jerry Mitchell, who's done lots of things like Hairspray and Legally Blonde over here. So he's sort of...
It's one of those ones I can't imagine what it's like on stage.
Really? Yeah.
From a film.
It's very romantic.
Yeah, very romantic.
We have Danny Mac playing the lead role, and we have...
Really annoyingly good-looking lead role.
Absolutely, playing Richard Gere. Amy Atkinson, who's one of the six girls.
Six?
You know Six the Musical.
Oh, right, I thought you meant there
were
six. Julia Roberts is turning to six different girls.
That would be amazing.
Wow.
That would be amazing. But Amy's fantastic in the show. And then we have Rachel Wooding and Bob Harms playing two of the other lead roles. And I play Stucky, who's the baddie.
Was he in the film? I'm trying to think of the film.
Yeah, he was very differently cast in the film.
Right, okay.
He's kind of...
was he the pit,
short,
the
chubby guy with bald
nothing
head?
Like you, mate.
he's the lawyer friend.
Oh, yes, I remember.
He sort of attacks Vivian at the end of the film. And obviously we do that in the musical as well.
So basically you're done press night, and then...
We've done 4 weeks we do press night, and another 2 weeks performance, I think it was, so 6 weeks in total. And then our Prime Minister gave his speech on March the 16th, saying that people shouldn't be going to the theatre. We were in warm-up at this point, about to do a show, and our producers obviously had to run across London to come and tell everybody to go home, and tell us to go home, and that was the last time we were all in the theatre together.
That's mad. Do you remember thinking at the time?
We thought at the time...
It'd be a couple of weeks.
Maybe a couple of months or so. I mean, certainly back by now, by September. I think we were thinking we're definitely back by September. Whereas now a lot of the theatres have obviously closed down.
Which is so sad, isn't it? I mean...
Absolutely.
Theatre, I think...
It's really hard.
Even more than America, is part of our lifeblood, isn't it? It's really,
London...
Broadway. They've got Broadway, but we don't just have the West End. We have Chichester, and we have Bath, and we have, like...
I think everybody suffers. I think it's been talked about a lot. Not to get too political, no. But the bars and clubs and restaurants
around
London and all the cities with their theatres, they do suffer.
But really, because you spit on stage, that it makes it much more...
It's about this social distancing, isn't it? About having
and you
lots
can't
of
own a theatre with that less of people, can you?
And you know,
I did always think the orchestra below deck, but that's quite a enclosed little warm space as well. That's probably quite bad.
I don't know
the orchestra.
But yeah, I agree, and also us on stage.
Yeah,
you know, Danny and Amy have lots of lovely romantic kissing scenes and things, and
which you can't.
Which they would have to be in a bubble,
which
or the
would be
whole
horrendous, cut. I think, wouldn't it?
That's all in a hotel together.
For 6 months. Oh my God.
So, otherwise you do a concert version of the shows, which people are doing.
What do you mean a concert version?
So, in terms of just standing there and singing the songs.
Oh,
and
okay.
The
God, yeah.
Well, they, you know,
which
they do
kind
it very...
what soaps are doing now at the moment.
Well, with all their Perspex screens I've seen.
Yeah,
amazing.
Yeah. Amazing, yeah.
Well, maybe you
and
could
real
do
life
part,
and real life partners coming to act as well, apparently.
Oh, really?
To do kissing scenes.
Oh, I see. And then filming them from there. I did see that, yeah.
Which is still quite weird, because that's bound to be like a stunt woman scenario.
Yeah.
When they can't
I'm not
act.
Sure you could, like,
you
sub
get away with
Carly Stenson into a scene just for Amy, just for, like, the love-making scene.
No.
And piano and sex, and then get her out.
Yeah, it's a weird thing, and you wouldn't. I mean, I remember EastEnders were talking about at the beginning to go into lockdown altogether. I mean, everyone's lovely.
Yeah.
You couldn't do that, could you? I mean,
intense. Listen, if you knew it was going to be for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks.
Yeah, not indefinitely.
But not indefinitely.
No.
You know, not like, well, it could be 3 months or 5 months, and you go, well.
And not in Boreham Wood.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
We'd be all right in London, but.
So I suppose the big thing about theatre as well coming back from this is getting all the cast back together as well, because certain people would have gone to do other stuff, I suppose.
Well, yeah, so we were all our contracts ended in January, or would end in January, and we've all negotiated to come back to the show to do a 6 month extension of that contract, so it's till July, whenever we go back. Well, sorry, I'm saying if we... So if we go back in October, it'll be 6 months.
Yeah, yeah.
If we go back in December, it'll be 6 months.
But no one knows. That's the thing.
Yeah, but obviously...
What was the reaction like? Was it good?
Oh,
Because the buzz, you saw it everywhere.
We were full. That's why they can commit to coming back, you know, whereas some shows have had to cancel altogether because it sold really well and because it was, you know, the audiences were loving it and they know that when they do reopen, it's going to be full and they're going to make some money. And then they'll probably take the show on tour. They'll have a long-term plan. It'll probably do a worldwide tour. Not with us, but with, you know, other casts. So they obviously have to think long-term. And 6 months or a year in the West End is the perfect way to start that long-term plan.
Yeah.
You go, it's West End hit, Pretty Woman, goes on tour, goes on world tour.
And then they make another film with you in.
Yeah.
And so,
finally,
what is the difference between you know, if you're in a big soap, you're massive, and you get a buzz, I suppose, from everyone's watching, everyone's commenting, and you've got the theatre that's instant gratification. How would you compare them both? And what's you've been probably at the height of telly and the height of theatre now. So what's the, you know?
Well, I think the sort of celebrity of working on a soap is definitely slightly different from working in a musical. You get people come to stage door, and you get the audience. Really enjoying your performance and everything else, but it's not quite the same as walking around the streets and being recognised.
Yeah. Do you still get recognised for EastEnders?
Much less so the longer you're away from the soap.
Yeah.
But yes, sometimes, you know, certainly people who are proper fans of the show would
You're supposed to be in prison. Oh, you're supposed to be in Wakefield.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that Helen?
Helen?
But, so there's that. And trying to think, obviously, working in theatre, you do get the, like you say, the instant gratification. And I think it is most people like working with that way because it's there straight away.
Yeah.
You can play your part from start to end, so you get to play the whole story.
And what's it like doing, because I suppose the other massive difference is EastEnders, you know, you screw up that script and it's done. Like, whereas theatre, you're doing the same thing every night. I mean, I've never quite got how you do the same thing every night.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Like, I've worked with people like Matt Wolfenden on a pantomime called Aladdin at the Old Vic with just a name drop, Ian McKellen.
I know, God.
And Francis Barber.
Which was how was that though?
And Roger Allen.
It's been amazing.
An amazing Christmas. Again, one of these jobs that was quite early in my career kind of happened to me without me realizing how
incredible.
Amazing that actually is.
Yeah.
Did Abby Ian McKellen playing your mum?
She played Widow Twankey and I played Aladdin, so...
That is incredible, isn't it? And what was he...
Well, I was only going to say that, you know, that was obviously a relatively short run, maybe 2 months, but Ian, on one hand, was different every night, if you like, sort of tried to stay in the moment and gave a freshness to what he was doing, and it was amazing. Roger Allen, on the other hand, was equally amazing, but did exactly the same thing every night. Sort of knew what he needed to land and do, and to get the audience response, and to think about pantomime, there's a lot of response, and he could do the same thing and get the same response every night. Whereas Ian, I guess by the nature of being a bit more relaxed with it and could go anywhere.
And pantomime, you can do a bit that, can't you?
Yeah, I mean, this was a posh pantomime. This was like an adult.
Yeah, no, I would love to. That's one of the ones I wish... I remember Matthew telling me about that. And I was I would love to have seen that. And what was it like working with a legend like him? I mean, did he impart...
It's amazing,
I mean, I think in acting, I suppose like with directors, I think people who think they've reached, like they've learned as much as they can, the ones that are rubbish. Do you know what I mean? Because you never stop learning, do you?
He's an amazing man. Obviously, you know, when you think about his career, was mainly theatre as a younger guy and then went and became a Hollywood superstar. But still has a desire to come back and do Coronation Street.
Yeah, I know. I know they can believe it when...
It's amazing that he would do that, I think. And to do pantomime. I think it's brilliant that Ian did that and these guys do that, because it's sort of trying to take the stigma out of that a little bit, of saying, if you do soap, if you do panto, it's too commercial, it's not proper, if you like. And that's wrong. And so Ian to go in and do an episode of Coronation Street, I think is amazing.
Amazing. And I think soap's changed, actually, over the years. It's become more... I mean, we had Amanda Donahoe in Emmerdale, even Danny Dyer joining EastEnders. Yeah. Was like, you know, a film star.
Yeah, bona fide film star. Joining us, soap.
Yeah.
And doing a great job.
Okay, so it was a few months ago now that I spoke to Neil. Now we're coming into winter and in lockdown, so Neil's online with me. Hello, mate.
Hello, mate. You all right?
Yeah, very good, thanks. And exciting news, because I just wanted everyone to know that you, along with Gina Beck, have written a play and you're putting it on at the Charing Cross Theatre in December, and it's called The Elf Who Was Scared of Christmas. How amazing is it to be back in theatre?
Mate, yeah, obviously when we chatted before, I couldn't talk about it because it hadn't all sort of happened yet. But now it's kind of all taken off. So Gina Beck and I, we live in the same village. We've known each other for like 20 years, having done youth theatre shows together. And we wanted to create something and do something. So we've written and created a show for young children, The Elf Who's Scared of Christmas. And we're really proud that we've managed to get it into a theatre, because, of course, not only do we create work for ourselves, but we create work for the lighting team, the sound team, stage management, and obviously for an audience to be able to come and watch something, and specifically a young audience. So we're really pleased that we're going to be going ahead 8th to the 23rd of December at the Charing Cross Theatre. You can get your tickets on the website. Please do come and enjoy some festive fun with us.
Yeah, you have to go. And the best thing is, Christmas, you know, we're used to pantos and stuff, so it's amazing, I think, that families have got the chance now to come and see something.
Yeah, this is more aimed at like a younger audience. So we are like under 10s, really. It isn't panto in so much as we're not winking at the audience saying, oh, we're playing elves. No, we're sort of really going for it and trying to make it believable for the young children and to keep that dream alive a little bit for an hour or so.
Amazing, mate. And just, I mean, the outfit itself is worth coming to see it for, isn't it?
Absolutely. Just to say, it's a 40-minute story, a 20-minute Christmas concert where everyone in the audience can sort of stand up in their seats where they are and join in the fun.
Amazing, mate. Well, listen, hope it goes well and have a nice Christmas.
Thanks, buddy. And you, Christmas is coming.
Take care, mate. Christmas is coming. Bye. I'm actually not that technical, so the fact that worked is amazing. And that's mostly thanks to David Stevens and the Bothy again for all their edit and technical wizardry. I am back next week with another episode, but you can catch up with me all week on social media at Soap from the Box on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook. And every Tuesday morning at 8:30 a.m, you can catch me on Gorgeous FM for another bit of soap gossip. Hope you have a good week. Stay safe and see you next week.